Next, we're going to continue our conversation about DNA evidence, but from a different perspective. DNA evidence has allowed for the exoneration of a small number of prisoners who were wrongly convicted, but unlike a parolee, these former prisoners are not given much help from the state once they're released into the community. If you'd like to join our conversation on this, give us a phone call. Again, it's the same, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is also totn@npr.org. In a minute, we're going to be joined by somebody who's been exonerated, but first with us is Dr. Lori Volin. She's co-founder of the Life After Exoneration Project, and she joins us from the studios of UC Berkeley Journalism School, and good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be here.
In general, what happens to most people once they've been exonerated?
Well, those that have come out who have been fortunate to have been found come out typically with a tremendous and profound loss that they've incurred. They have lost all of their assets. Many of them have lost their spouses. Family members have died. And from this, they come into a situation where they have no money, no place to live, no jobs, and no medical and dental care. And so from this very debilitating experience, they come into an overwhelmingly debilitating set of circumstances that they have to face on their own without any assistance whatsoever.
No money, you said. Aren't they given some sort of recompense by the state for their false incarceration?
The majority of states actually don't have legislation that provides for compensation. Those few states that do, and there's right now about 22 of them, one of the conditions for the compensation is that the individual no longer pursue any civil action. And many of the compensatory laws are very low, so the exoneree tries to go for civil litigation, but the vast majority do not find justice in the courts after their exoneration, nor from the states. And the state puts an extremely low limit on the amount of money these individuals can receive, some as little as $20,000, regardless of the number of years that they've had in prison. And even the most generous states are not adequate to compensate the person for what they have lost in the way of actual assets and time and opportunity.
Well, let's put a human face on this. Joining us now is Eduardo Velasquez. He was released after DNA evidence proved him not guilty of rape. He joins us from his office in Springfield, Massachusetts. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what your life was like before you were arrested?
Well, I before my incarceration or my wrongful incarceration, I think that I was young. I was in the 20s, and I was just starting a family. I was raising my a child, and my wife was pregnant of my first child, and typically go to work every day, come home, relax with your family, you see, and go to school at night and get an education. And suddenly we decided to move, you know, to another state to try something new and come here to Massachusetts. And this is when this, this took place.
And how long were you in prison?
Approximately about almost 14 years.
14 years?
Yes.
Now, how did that affect your personal life?
Well, personally, it affected everything because, you know, once you're in prison, you have those close family members who, without a doubt, they don't question your innocence. And then you have those who are a little distant who has a little questions. And then it comes there where it comes to separation and, you know, and the bickering and the fighting among family members. And then those around you, you know, your friends and those close to you who, you know, who say, well, you had a chance in court, you was convicted, but they don't understand the legal process, so they say, well, if you were innocent, why you didn't prove it in your trial? So, you know, it raises a lot of questions.
After 10 years or so, did you just give up, mentally?
Well, I never gave up, you know. I mean, giving up is just a frame of mind. I thought that I was innocent and I will prove my innocence to the day I die. So when I was tried for this case, I was illiterate of the English language. I didn't know no English. I didn't know how to read it, write it, or speak. So I was going into a system with an interpreter who was telling me one thing that they was not even saying in court.
Now, when did you finally get exonerated?
In 2000, August 15, 2001.
We're speaking with Eduardo Velasquez and with Dr. Lori Volin, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And when you were exonerated and released from prison there in Massachusetts, did the state give you any assistance?
Well, the district attorney that was that got in the case, which was Mr. William Bennett, he was not the district attorney through the whole process. You see, it was his predecessors, under Mighty Ryan and Diane Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
So they put every opposition. I was the first incarcerated inmate in the penal system of Massachusetts to file for DNA testing in 1991. And the motion was denied because the judge said, without prejudice, that it was a trial tactic attorney not to use DNA testing during the legal process during trial. And we wrote back and told the judge, Your Honor, there was no such thing in 1988 or 87 as DNA testing. This is a Rule 30B, motion for a new trial on the newly discovered evidence. So he denied me the motion, and that was in 91. And then I kept appealing and appealing, and 10 years later, let's say 7 years later, the Innocence Project, I heard through them, and they got involved in the case. And as soon as they got involved, they started writing letters and making this loud voice, which I was screaming out loud for somebody to hear me, and, things started moving.
Hmm. Dr. Bowen?
Eduardo's experience is very typical in terms of the perseverance, energy, and tenacity all of the exonerees bring to the process, even though oftentimes, it seems like a quixotic quest. What happens after all of that energy and that buildup, they come to find when they get out, ironically, that the hoopla is gone and they are left with an overwhelming set of challenges, and some actually would prefer to go back to prison because at least there they can get a job. So the very characteristics that allow them to free themselves through these projects are the very characteristics that come back to haunt them when they get out.
I could understand, applying for a job, how you can explain that 14-year gap in your resume. Eduardo, what are you doing now?
Well, basically, she summarized everything in her opening statement and what she did. I truly agree with her. When I came out, I thought I was going to be helped by a system that, put me in prison wrongly, and I thought I was going to have all these opportunities so I could get my life moving with my family. But when I come out, I have these politicians who promise me, mayor and state representatives who promise me all these things. Oh, come to our time, we're going to take care of you. Don't go to New York. Come here, we're going to get you a job, we're going to get you a house, and you see. And, after all these promises, nothing, 1 month passed, 2 months passed, 3 months passed, 4 months passed, 5 months, a year, and I'm here looking for jobs, filling applications, 20 or 30 applications, and not because I didn't have the qualifications, because, I have a welder's license, by the Mass Department of Massachusetts. I have a plumber's license. I have a computer certificate with Office 2000. You see, so I was well prepared to any opportunity that they gave me. But the question was, where you been for 14 years?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't have no alibis. I don't have nobody who backs me up. Therefore, I have to ask my attorneys, like Peter and Barry and other organizations to write letters of recommendations, which they did, which was all great. But the question is, okay, you was innocent, but now how is your frame of mind when you've been incarcerated for 14 years? How did it affect you?
Yeah.
And they're afraid of taking that chance.
Eduardo is actually representative of the majority of exonerees who 50% are not employed, are not self-sufficient, do not have a home, and have no medical and no dental insurance. So this is typical even for exonerees who have been out for years.
Yeah, so after the year that I got out, I used those same politicians that, I'll say pimp me, excuse the wording, and they used me in front of a camera because they was running for re-elections, and I told them what happened with all those promises. So what I did, I came back with a camera to them, and I said, well, I need what you promised me. I need a job, I need housing, and I need, so I could have a financial stability and I could have a home that I could go up to and not be in a shelter and so on and so forth. And, by the will of God, I filled out some applications, and the agency which I work now, which is the New North Citizens Council, they gave me an opportunity. They felt that the interview that I gave, they felt that I had the qualifications, so they gave me an opportunity to be a caseworker, a case manager, and an outreach worker.
Well, Eduardo Velasquez, at long last, congratulations. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Eduardo Velasquez has been exonerated thanks to DNA evidence and is working now in Springfield, Massachusetts. And Dr. Lori Volin, we appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Lori Volin is co-founder of the Life After Exoneration Project, and she was with us from Berkeley, California. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.